Blog Talk Radio. Well, hello. You are listening to the Words on Flicks show on eWater Radio, KEWRDB. Thank you so much for joining me this evening for my second outing with the Words on Flicks show, movie talk from a fan perspective. And I think it's going to be an interesting show this evening, and I thank you for joining me. I've gotten a lot of great feedback from last week's show where I had guest Gil Robertson, who's president and co-founder of the African American Film Critics Association. And I'm really glad he was able to come on and talk with us about the great things that the organization is doing in terms of spotlighting, recognizing, and supporting the work of film critics of color. And we talked about the series that the AFCA was able to do with TCM. So that was a great way to kick off the show. And if you heard it, you know that there was great information there. And there's another great show for you tonight. Last week, I did recommend that you see the film The Hate U Give. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that. I'm sure a lot of people have seen it by now. There's already Oscar buzz around it. And I'll tell you, I was a little bit trepidatious about seeing the film because the topic hit so close to home for so many of us. We're weary and outraged and just discombobulated at so much gun violence, police brutality, young people having to cope with so much violence in their young lives. So I was a little concerned with how the film would portray this storyline on screen and how it would make me feel. And there's no fun way to approach the subject. There's no good way to, well, there is a good way. There is a good way to approach the topic, and this film is the good way because what director George Tillman Jr. does in the film is really make us see it through a young girl's eyes and make us see the death of her best friend from childhood from a lot of different points of view, and also how she deals with it, copes with it, becomes, basically grows up because of it. And there's a lot of good in this film. There's some really, I would have to say, towering acting performances in it. First of all, with Amandla Stenberg, who is really eminently watchable, and you see every emotion on her face. And you're able to see, you know, a young girl coping and having to code switch between, you know, the white, mostly white private school that she attends because she is such a smart, brilliant girl, multi-talented, and she comes from a really strong, loving family. And so that was wonderful to see depicted in the film. It's not the feel-good film of the year, but it is one of the most important films of the year. And another towering performance in it is by Russell Hornsby, who plays her father, whose name is Maverick, which I love that name. it came straight from the Angie Thomas novel. Very little was changed from the novel as far as I've been able to glean. If somebody knows differently, let me know, because I really haven't gotten to the end of the book, but I think I will now that I've seen this really wonderful, wonderful film. So it is highly recommended. If you haven't seen it yet, please go and take a young person with you. It is not, like I said, it's not the feel-good movie of the year, but it has some important things to say from a variety of viewpoints, even the viewpoint of the police department and how they view some of these confrontations when they do stop. I mean, it is another matter of why they stop and search so many young people of color. It really does show up the importance of having to have the talk with your children and what can happen if you don't prepare them for this unfortunate reality of being stopped by the police. So again, The Hate U Give, highly recommended. But now I want to talk about my guest for the evening. Paul Porter is my guest for the evening, and he is a veteran radio and television broadcast personality. He's been doing the dang thing for years and years. And the funny thing is that we were both in college in Boston at the same time. Didn't know him then, knew a lot of the same people, didn't know him. Our careers were on parallel trajectories, and we met later through the entertainment business. So let me tell you a little bit about him. I have a very long bio here, but I'm going to go over the highlights. Paul Porter has actually been a force in radio, music, and television for about 4 decades, so that tells you how long. And he does have a very deep, seductive radio voice, broadcast voice, and some of you have probably heard him over the years. He's been on many of the nation's top-rated radio stations. He spent 10 years at BET as program director, consultant, and on-air talent. So you have heard him, and you've probably seen him too. He is often sought out by major media outlets, including CNN, MSNBC, SiriusXM, Entertainment Tonight, and Fox News, to comment on music, culture, and race. He's co-founder of music industry nonprofit IndustryEars.com and the music culture website Rap Rehab. He's also the program director at Orlando, Florida's low-power FM station, The Wire 85, I'm sorry, 98.5, The Wire 98.5. Paul is also the author of a tell-all book called Blackout, My 40 Years in the Music Business. And let me tell you, this book is really something. This book really tells the truth of his journey in the music biz. And the press release says, "Music industry veteran Paul Porter has released the book Blackout, an explosive look at the corruption running rampant in the music industry." It details Porter's experiences in the music industry from his first stint in radio in 1976 to his tenure at BET and some of the nation's top-rated radio stations. And I have read the book. It's really well done. And one of the reasons that I like Paul is that, you know, he doesn't sugarcoat things. When he has something to say, he says it, he pulls no punches, and it's real. So I would like to welcome to the Words on Flicks radio show, Mr. Paul Porter. Are you
Wow,
there,
what an
Paul?
open that was. Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Welcome to the show.
Man, I was listening and I got confused. I was like, who's she talking about?
Who's she talking about? Is that
Thank you
me?
for
Did
that
I do all
warm
those
welcome.
things?
Yeah, the one thing you got is 40 years, that's for sure. That caught
Yeah.
my attention. I was like, don't try to age me, because I'm doing hip hop and R&B on my station in Orlando. I could be doing the old thing, redoing the Mighty Mighty OJs or the Tom Joyner Cruise, but I'm not doing that. I'm not
No, don't.
falling victim
You
to
got to
it.
mix it up. Because
Yeah,
you're a music lover.
I gotta, and plus I gotta be next to the young people. It helps me keep my eyes fresh and my mind clear. It's just real
I
easy to get
understand.
stuck.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I know that you have a lot of concern about young people and the type of music that they are exposed to, and that's important too.
Well, you know, that's been my thing for, wow, almost 20 years now. I got to see how content just changed. And we're at that point in, you know, television and news and media and the president on down where the standard has been so low. And I'm all for everything, but it should be in balance. And the diet that we've been delivering to young people for so long is so small. It's like 85% the same thing, and that pains me. And that's what I talk about in Blackout. You know, the beauty, and you're lucky, Janine, you've been through a couple of different eras of music with different feels and performances and stars, and it feels different now. I don't have that
It
same
does.
closeness where I would drive to a concert with four friends for an hour to go see some of the best bands of all time. It's a different feeling now with everything being digital and in your hand. So music has, you know, I used to know everybody in a band. Like, nobody
Yeah.
can name Beyoncé's band.
Yeah.
You know, and I hate to, you know, sound old, but that's what I'm saying. It's not that same warmth.
Yeah.
And you know, I know we'll get into it, but I just had
We
to bring
will.
that up that my energy is taking me there.
Okay. Well, let me ask you also to if you could hold your phone kind of steady, because I feel like you're going in and out, and I want to make sure that people hear everything that you have to say.
All
And
right, I'm going to
I'm
follow
sure
your
you.
every command and I will not move.
Okay. So, we both grew up in New York, you were in Queens, right?
Jamaica Funk, Tom Brown, Linden Boulevard, 144th Street. And you know, Linden Boulevard, I used to ride my bike to James Brown's house that lived on Linden, and I think it was 234th or 235th, and he had a black steel fence, you know, I forgot what you called it, and it had JB in it, and we used to
Really?
ride our bikes around, and sometimes, like twice, we've seen the limousine, but never saw him, but, you know,
Wow.
that was the good day. Hell, I talk about in the book how the one record that changed my life, and I know there's films that have changed my life, but the record was James Brown, Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud. I was 10, 11 years old, and I heard that
Yeah,
record,
man.
and I was real confused on color because I wanted my hair to be like my Puerto Rican boy, Bucky. And I wanted to be lighter skinned, and I was scared to say black. And when Say It Loud on Black and I'm Proud came out and James Brown did it, I was black until today. You know, and no offense
That
to
was a
African
pivotal,
American.
right. Back in those days, if somebody called you black, those were fighting words, before that, until, the Black Power movement came along. So that really was pivotal for us,
I mean, that was a and there are things in entertainment that's supposed to make you feel good or touch you, and you know, There's different types of fields now, but those were some good days, you know. And I'm not saying they're not good days now, but they're a different sense of intimacy. Like, you sort of fell in love with an album before. Like, you would go listen to the whole thing in a room and sit down and listen to the Isleys. And I'm not trying to age or date myself, but now I listen to... I listened to, you know, three cuts from LMA, two cuts from Tyga, you know, Black and Kodak Black, and it's you just don't give music that much time. It's not like anybody's fooling you for 60 minutes these days.
There are a couple of artists who do some great albums beginning to end. You just have to pick your artist. I mean, you know, we still have Jill Scott and Janelle Monáe, and, you know, look, even Justin Timberlake can do something interesting from time to time, a whole album.
Ow,
you still
ow,
have.
Let's not fight now.
No, we're not going to fight. No, I know.
Okay.
But, you know, I don't want to demonize all artists, you know, everything's to our taste. And remember, when we were young, our parents didn't understand our music either, okay? You know,
well,
we were doing Keep
young.
People
no,
on
no,
Bumping.
I know. But getting back to what we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
You know, there's a difference of not liking something or seeing the energy that it creates. There's just like a darker time. It's like, you know, gothic music is cool, but when you see those gothic kids, they're different. And there's nothing wrong with being different. But I know that's not everybody's choice, you know, and it stands out. And the music, to me, stands out and is so painful and so hurtful and so mind-shrinking that nobody pays attention. It's like they're pushing this drug down your kid's throat 24/7, but you're listening to the oldie station or don't know what to do. Or, you know, and that's shameful. And that's what
I want to
music industry. Okay.
I want to get back to that. You make some really good points. And, you know, you have had such a long career in radio and in broadcasting. What made you want to go into broadcasting, or did you just kind of accidentally fall into it? How did you get started?
Look, we talked about growing up in Queens. I played high school basketball, and I thought I had some game. And I followed a high school girlfriend that wasn't my girlfriend until I followed her to college. And got a basketball at Northeastern. So I got in there and I got to play college ball. And the college radio station was just something up there. I went to school, I was an accounting major. And that
accounting major?
Yeah. That was like, that's how unschooled I was. And, school turned out terrible for me, but, you know, basketball was good. It got me in college radio on my college radio station, WRBB. Matter of fact, we have a reunion coming up in the first week of November. I'm proud I turned a little 10-watt station around. It was all white and rock. I got there and learned how to become a member and take a vote. I gathered students. Black students that were in the quad, and, you know, Northeastern was 98% white. And if you went to three station meetings in a row, you became a member. So every week I would bring up 5 black kids, 7 black kids, 8 black kids. Well, when we voted that fall on program director, there were more black kids than white kids, and they voted me program director. I changed the format from rock and roll all day. Black was only midnight to 3. I made it funk all day. Said I had Cameo and Parliament and Earth, Wind & Fire. So and the station stayed black. And out of that radio station, you know, Wendy Williams, Darius Walker, the CNN bureau chief, Jay Dixon's at Hot 97 New York. It's just an all-star list of people that went to that college and went through that radio station. It's sort of like a Syracuse and Northwestern where, you know, Mike Shannon, who's Sirius XM. Anyway, there's some great people that have spent some time there and are still doing good things in the business. So I'm proud of where I came from. It wasn't planned, but there was a love for music then that I think everybody had. Like, music was that form of entertainment. It's, you know, I know your show's about culture and flicks and what people are watching, and it's just scary how things change so quickly. Like, I'm wondering if flicks are, and movies are ever going to go out. Are everybody's just going to watch shorts? Yeah.
I don't think movies will go out of style, but I just to go back to what you were saying about RBB for listeners, at that time in Boston, like, RBB ruled the Boston college market, not even just the college market. It was the urban station. Everybody tuned in, and, you know, it was
a power. Yeah.
It was amazing.
Shows on. Yeah. Hey, man, I remember a time we had live in our studio. LTD came up once. New Birth came up there. And my favorite show was when Roy Ayers came and played. And it was a 10-watt college station, but it was so listened to in Boston. It, you know, it's what legends are made for. And it's funny, Wendy Williams is, she started at RBB, and we talk a lot. And all she does is talk about that experience. Because when you're that young and you finally figure out what you want to do, I never thought I'd still be doing it, you know, 40-something years later. And with a passion, you know, that's sort of cool.
Yeah.
Did it pay me everything I wanted? No. Did I have great times? And then there's other times when I was Internet Paul and learning how to tweet and start my websites. Yeah. But I wouldn't trade it for the world. And that's why I wrote the book. I wanted to tell the story, man. I tell the stories of ups and downs because it was tough out there for a minute.
Absolutely. It's hard for talent to get in, and sometimes it can be hard to stay in, and then you get your, you know, it's competitive.
I call it, you know, and I know you might get mad at me for this gross selective amnesia. You can have people that you know in this business for 25, 30 years that could direct something your way that could be. But people don't look out for each other in this business. There's always those two people that go up the ladder together, or those small groups of people that always look out for each other. But overall, it's pretty sad, the entertainment industry. It's like, you know people are doing bad. And I don't like that. You know, I'm a lover, not a fighter.
Yeah, well, the corporatization and consolidation of radio companies, that could be a whole other show, but it's really ramped up the competitiveness. People find it hard to help other people, give them a hand. You're pitted against some of your friends in the industry. And also, you know, there's an underside to it, which you really cover in your book, Blackout. And what do you think, what part of the book has gotten like the biggest reaction from people, or has surprised people that they told you, wow, I did not know this was going on?
Well, the funny thing is, I started every book that I signed, I put my telephone number in it. And I'll tell people when I sign it to call me and tell me what you think, send me a text. sent me a picture of you in the book, and I've gotten over a couple hundred calls back or texts or whatever over the course of the last year and a half. So it's been really great energy. People are really, well, first of all, I think that there's one class of people that just remember the different eras and the times and all the way up until now. So it brings back memories. Then the other side is the money side of it, the business side of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, wow, this sort of ties some of these pieces together that I heard about, thought about, or didn't think about, or damn, this is obvious, you know. So, and you know, I tried to write a book that was like a movie because I wanted it to be a movie, and then I could come back on Words on Flicks, and you'd be Paul Porter, Blackout, my 40.
Yeah.
See, Blackout, the title for me, Blackout means a temporary loss of consciousness. And that's what I think happens in so many realms that, you know, I'm one of those old thinkers, you know, some of the movies during the civil rights era were important to me, even though they weren't, you know, stand up and raise your fist movies. But it was the first time I started to see images of black people on TV. I know it was Superfly. I know, you know, some of the
blaxploitation era.
Yeah. But that was all, you know. And hey, I watched I Spy. Look what happened to Bill Cosby. So
let's not go there.
No, I know, but I just think it's a serious time now, and I'm glad
it is.
We're talking, and that's why I love podcasts, because people get to talk. And I think that's the problem now, that we're not talking. We're texting. We're getting snippets. We're, you know, and that's why numbers are down in everything. The one thing about putting out a book, I didn't expect to get rich off. Nobody buys books anymore. Nobody reads like they used to. Yeah, it's okay if you write about the president or something, but it's hard out there now. People are spending their money, and everybody wants something for free. Free.
That's true.
Yeah,
but the people who are, you are sharing your story, and, you know, you are telling the real deal. I mean, you're telling stories of the parties, of the promotions, the promotion people, you know, the excesses in the industry. And it is cinematic, you know, it's dramatic.
Like I said, I snorted Peru. Back then, I was high as a kite. I did a lot of crazy things. I lived through it, and you know, would I take it back? No, it was part of my story, and the truth that I enjoy speaking my whole life, which I get more pain for being Paul Porter, you know, more hate me. But look, I got a great core of friends that love me and know me well, but I got a bunch of haters out there because people don't like the truth. And I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know, that's the one thing I love to learn from my mama. You know, tell the truth. And I feel good telling the truth. And it might seem outspoken, but when you really think about it, that's how you should be. Everybody should be outspoken. Like, why take it? Like, you know, why be on the job and you're on the conference call and somebody, you know, and the record industry was a world of screamers and yellers. That's how people thought they get things done, is fear, you know.
True.
They used to scare promotion people. I know you were, what you did, I know you know some screamers, please.
Yeah, I got screamed at in one of my record company jobs. I only had two record company jobs, and I said to myself, the day I get really cussed out, I'm a leave, and that's exactly what happened.
Really? You
I had to
freed
leave.
that and left.
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah. I'm not going to say who, but you
that.
would know who. Yeah.
I know who it is.
I know
and
you know because we've talked.
Yeah, but
so
anyway.
if Blackout got made into a movie, and it could, right? Who would play you? Huh?
I don't know, some shady character. You know, the good thing
Chadwick
about me,
Boseman.
Nah, he's not even good looking enough for me.
Really he's
not
tall
Chadwick's,
enough.
Yeah, he's good, but I'm 6'3", you know. And I'm a lefty, too, and my head's tilted a little bit, and I got sleepy eyes, so it's hard. I'd rather have an upstart than have some old veteran play me, you know. You got to capture me around 35, 40. Because
okay.
I'm still not my age now, you know. But anyway,
of course not.
Yeah.
Neither am I. So you mentioned a couple of blaxploitation movies. Is there a movie from childhood that you remember that really had an impact on you? I mean, I remember my parents taking me to see, like, we saw a lot of Disney stuff, and there was a huge Whitestone drive-in movie theater in the South Bronx near where I grew up, and we were in that drive-in theater all the time, and I saw Bambi. That's what I remember, seeing Bambi. Oh, my gosh, this is amazing. I'm a little kid. Bambi is so cute. Look at the butterflies. Look at the bunnies. Oh, my God, it's so adorable. Then Bambi's mother gets killed, and that just shattered all my little, you know, childhood illusions. That was so painful to me, and it stayed with me. And, you know,
well,
so that's the first
yeah.
movie that I really remember, you know.
That's funny. I had what I call a movie block when I was younger, because one of the first things I saw on television was Alfred Hitchcock, The Birds.
Oh,
but
my God.
I was playing football and basketball. And my father and mother sat me down to watch The Birds. I was never the same. It made me want to play sports. I was scared of the TV. I was back in my room. And, you know, I lived near Kennedy Airport in New York and Queens. So there were nothing
but
chickens around. Dirty-ass pigeons, excuse me. But it reminded me of The Birds, and I thought they were coming to get me for years. But finally, my dad started taking me out. I know this sounds weird, but I saw every James Bond movie there was. I was the black kid that got influenced by James Bond and Aston Martin. So that's why those images, those movies, seeing the James Bond movies early, those were my stories early on. Because my dad, he was an architect, worked for Alcoa Aluminum. I only remember my dad in suits. He always wore a suit. You know, when he came out and what he was doing, you know, I have a picture here. It's him at a big firm in New York at their big dinner. It's like 300 people, and they have this master shot. And there's two black people up in the rear corner. One's my dad. But he was making it back then where, you know, he could have a house built in 1957. You know, that was big. You order a house back then, please.
Yeah. You were living the dream, the American dream.
Yeah, but and the dream, you know, I'm glad that people are starting to fight again. I'm feeling a different energy. It's like we move in pockets, and I think this is a good time to take some of this energy upwards. I'm always thinking about motivation and sharing. And when you told me you had this show, I begged you. really embarrassed that I had to beg you for so long and you squeezed me into your second show. But
oh,
I truly appreciate it.
Okay, so everybody who's listening, as soon as Paul heard that I was doing the words on Flick's show, he was like my number one supporter, advisor, you know, cheerleader, and wanted to be among my first guests. So having friends like this is invaluable, and he has so much to say, and you're listening to the words on Flick's show with Janine Coveney and guest Paul Porter. And Paul is, you know, you're a veteran in the radio broadcasting industry. And it just, because this, you know, it made me think about some of the movies that have tried to depict what it's like to be a radio host on film. And sometimes you can't really capture it, but I know there was one film that came out a little more than 10 years ago about a black radio DJ who really made a difference in the Washington, D.C. area. And the film was Talk to Me. It was directed by Casey Lemons, and it starred Don Cheadle. And it was
so
based on the life of the late, the late Petey Green. And he, you know, he was a former, you know, he was an ex-con who had done some broadcasting in, you know, in Stir, in prison, and was very popular there and kind of burst into the scene in WOL Washington during the 60s and 70s.
But that's what made the movie so great. They showed Petey doing what he did for real, because back then people were personalities. People were in the community. And the black radio station was the voice of the community. That was, if it was, you know, on that AM station, it was happening across town. It was talked about at church. But there were so many things that black radio did with the movement and with the music. It was, you know, it was a really good time. And they were local. You know, they weren't, you know, now they're all syndicated and sort of watered down. So you don't even know about local. The most syndicated formats are black. You know, Tom Joyner's heard in more places than everywhere else. Why is that? Is it, you know, is it easier to cater to blacks, or is Michael Basin, or anyway, that's a different discussion, but, you know, that's some of the issues that I also talk about in the book. Like, snap out of it, folks.
Yeah. It is really important. Did you know or hear Petey Green at all? I mean, he might have been a little bit before your time.
No, he was before my time. But when I got to D.C. in the early 80s, everybody talked about Petey Green, and he was still around. I think he had a, you know, cable access show. So, no, but I thoroughly enjoyed the movie, because I think Don Cheadle, man, is just unbelievable. Plus, I just love the storyline and Talk to Me. It felt like the times, you know, because luckily I was young enough to experience some of those times too. And I just thought it showed the power that one guy could have and change things with the microphone. And that's why I wanted to go into the business, you know, because the guys that I heard, you know, I talk about Gary Bird, who reminded me of, you know, Petey Green, who's, of course, younger, but, you know, he had a record out, Every Brother Ain't a Brother. And
that's Gary Bird from New York.
Yeah, from Gary Bird. And Petey Green was D.C.'s version, you know, when the riots came. And, you know, I just think it was a great movie. It didn't get a lot of play, than I think it should,
yeah.
But it's always a good movie to recommend to folks. Like, you know, it's a great storyline.
Yeah, it really was. The performances were amazing. And I think, it went with a soundtrack, and the soundtrack, the music from that time, you know, the 1970s was really amazing. We were reaping the benefits of the Black Power movement, and soul music was really reaching its heyday. So not only was Petey riveting the community with his talk and his realness, he was also holding them down with some really great tracks at that time. So you're getting both in that movie. And I think you're right that it didn't get the attention that it deserved, because I think it was marketed a little bit as a comedy, and that certainly there are comic elements to his character, but his impact
was comedy.
Serious.
Yeah. That was, you know, people can say I'm pretty funny too, but I'm far from a damn comic, but I can make you laugh. But he was in on some real issues, and, you know, the good thing is when you watch it, get to think about what we're missing, because they're still on the table now, the same stuff.
Absolutely. So I wanted to talk about Halloween. This holiday is coming up, and traditionally the film and entertainment industry has used the Halloween weekend to churn out these horror slasher kind of films. I know there's films about witches and vampires and all of that. And I'm actually a fan of some of the vampire films, but I have never really been into Halloween. And, I don't know if it's cultural or generational or just where
it's
I grew up, because, well, I know a lot of black folks.
When you were young?
Oh, my gosh. So growing up in the South Bronx, okay, I lived in a high-rise apartment building. And it was part of a collection of four buildings. They were 19 stories high, and we would get dressed up and go by elevator or stairway trick-or-treating through the building. And if you were really ambitious, you'd go to the other three buildings out in the cold.
Okay.
And, you know, kids would run up behind us with socks filled with rocks or chalk and smack you on the back. They would snatch your candy.
Yeah.
They would knock you down. Yeah. I remember one time my mother made me, I might have been 11 or 12, and I had piano lessons. I had piano lessons in the evening, like maybe 5, 4:35, and it was Halloween, and I begged my mother, please do not make me go out there. She's like, I paid for these lessons at, I forget what it was. It was the YWCA or something, the YHA or something like that. You're going. We paid for these lessons. You're going. So I reluctantly went out. You know, I'm walking by myself in those times when children could walk by themselves. And I'm waiting on the corner for the light to change. Somebody threw raw eggs off a terrace at the building and just smacked me in the head and the back. So I was covered with raw egg, you know, happy Halloween.
Oh, wow.
So it wasn't
yeah,
a good time
well,
for me. Did
yeah, I
did
mean,
you like Halloween
I,
as a kid?
Halloween is, I used to like candy, you know, walking around, but we were worried about getting our bags snatched, but I never got my bags snatched, so I was good. And, you know, now Halloween is, I turn off my light at my house. Don't be telling me.
Yeah.
I go see a couple of kids. Nobody wants to go to the door anymore. You know, the biggest thing about Halloween is who's going to be in blackface this year. You know? That's what this got Megyn Kelly fired, her comments about blackface, but that's a new story.
It is a news story. It's a different story. What is amazing to me and many people of color is how she didn't know that was wrong. Like, how do you not know that attempting to change your skin color?
You know what? This is where we differ. I just think if you're white and you never knew any better, it makes sense. Why can't I dress up and look like Diana Ross if I want to look like Diana Ross? I can understand that whole vibe. I can. Of course, you know, there's a different view of what people, but hey, man, the good thing about Megyn Kelly, she gets to be so distant from reality with her statements. But as a severance, she's probably going to get $30, $40 million. Shoot. That's a pretty good day.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, if you're ignorant, one day you learn. We all have to learn, you know. You got to learn the lessons of life, and there, you know, there it is. So she learned. But to get back to our discussion of Halloween, it's funny because the Halloween movie just came out, you know, with Jamie Lee Curtis. And let me tell you, this Halloween movie, which is, I didn't go. I think it's a sequel. I wouldn't say it's a remake. It's a sequel to the original Halloween from like 78 or something. That movie made $76 million. In its opening weekend.
It's not black people. Yeah, it's not black people.
Well,
Halloween movies.
How do you know? How do you know that? How do you know that?
Because nobody talks about it. You could go on Facebook and know. I got 5,000 friends, another 20,000 on my pages, and nobody's going to talk about a Halloween movie all weekend. But they sure were.
But
Wakanda and everything else. But nobody's talking about it.
I feel you, but I think it's like one of those guilty pleasure movies. I mean, you're going to go, but you're not going to tell everybody. Like, I went to see Mamma Mia and Mamma Mia 2. I enjoyed the hell out of those movies. I thought they were fun. I love ABBA. I love Meryl Streep. But, you know, I'm not
going to trumpet that to everyone. Yeah, but if you went in and there was a guy that had a paper bag on four rows away from you, you would leave.
A paper bag? What are you talking about?
It could look like a wild, crazy shooter at a Halloween. Somebody had on a mask watching the movie. You would be nervous. You would leave. Because you're not the tough girl from the Bronx. You're sort of suburban now, you know?
I'm a little bit suburban now. Yeah, I confess.
Yeah,
I confess.
Now you walk near the beach. That's okay. You got city stories. You got your Halloween stories and getting hit with an egg.
Oh, awful. But let me tell you, when I was 13, I think it was 13. Oh, God, I'm really dating myself now. I went with some friends. I don't even know how I got with this group of people, but it was like six of us. And I think some of the kids were a little older than me. And they were like, we're going to see The Exorcist. The Exorcist just came out and we're going to see this movie. And I said, well, you know, I don't know that much about The Exorcist, but that's what we're all doing. So, again, this is New York. We went downtown. It was freezing. I want to say it was either January or February, and I should have looked up when the opening was because it was like that opening week. It was that Paramount Theater right in Columbus Circle where you had to go downstairs to go to the movies. I don't know if you know New York like that. I used to know every single movie theater.
I was Manhattan. You know, I lived in Jamaica and got on the Long Island Railroad. My dad wouldn't take the subway. He was bougie. His name was Leroy, but in business it was Leroy.
Leroy, okay. The king.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, well. I'm good. And can I just say the name where to get the book at so I can sign it?
Oh, yeah, we'll get to that. I was good.
I know, but, you know, there's different segments. I just felt like saying blackoutthebook.com.
Right, just came over you, the compulsion.
Yes.
I was definitely going to give you the opportunity as we came to a close. We still have about a little less than 10 minutes to go. But I just wanted to say The Exorcist was one of the few movies that I actually ran out of because it's terrifying. Now, that's age 13. Yeah. So what are your thoughts on horror movies, because you're telling me I'm not that tough when it comes to these things, but what about you?
I said the birds turn me up. I don't need horror. I've seen it in my life. I know horror people. I'm not a horror fan. I'm not going to even try horror. I'd rather watch the Food Network than go see a horror movie. And I like eating food, but I don't need to watch it till evening. That would be torture watching the Food Network for me. Some people could buy food. I'm not too focused. But, I don't know.
No, I know. I guess some people feel like they need the challenge of being scared. It makes them feel alive, or it makes them feel like they've survived something. You know, I don't know. I don't know what the appeal is, particularly like some of these gore movies like Saw or these movies where people are cutting off limbs.
Yeah, but there's that world out there. There's that dark, gothic, dark makeup, want to be dark. My room is black, my furniture is black, everything is black, it is dark, you know, and I'm evil and I'll take some pills and I'll slice you up and eat you. Oh, I have to get that out. There's a lot of dark people out there. There's a lot of love, but man, we are getting so dark and evil. But I live in Florida, so I'm ready.
Okay, you got the sea and the sand to keep you positive.
It's being positive, you know. Maybe you can get it at the movies and maybe you can't. Maybe your television can do it for you, or maybe it's the music, you know. Somebody needs to get a jump start sometimes, and there's a lot of good things on film these days. I was at Gary, Indiana about a week ago. They had the Black Film Festival there. And they had a brother named, Hans Charles. He's been a DP for Ava DuVernay. And another brother who has a channel called Real Black. And his partner, I can't think of his name. And we got to talk film for a couple of hours. So it's funny hearing from guys that are, you know, working on some major projects and doing different things that they want to do, how difficult it is to get to the big screen. You know, when you're converting, film for YouTube, it's a whole different feel than the big screen.
It is.
And you have to know that up front. And think about those things. So, you know, we've been stuck to some flashes of brilliance. Everybody likes the short clip. I would like movies if I can fall in love. I like the real weepers. You know, I want to cry at the end.
Do you? You like tearjerker movies?
Yeah, I'm sensitive.
Aw, I do know that about you.
Yeah, I like to be more sensitive. You know, and I'm a tough guy too. You know, I carry a gun every day, but want to cry. I still get off the plane and I think about calling my mommy, and she's been gone for almost 7 years. I just got off the plane every day and I started to I said, I'm still calling my mother. I'm an only child, so I'm a big baby. That's another story.
That's another story. Do you have a favorite tear-jerking movie that you can share with us?
Well, you know, when you said tear-jerker, and I couldn't even think of a movie. I thought of a television movie. Does that count?
Well, tell me what that is.
Brian's Song.
I knew you were going to say that because that is the all-time classic.
Yeah, that was a classic, and I just cried like, if it, you know, I know the feeling of having a black-white teammate, you know, and it was just sad, and I was like, wow.
So it was James Caan.
Yeah, James.
James Caan and what's the brother's name?
The fake Billy D. That's what I call
Billy
him.
D. It was the Gale Sayers story about the two football players and the friendship between Brian Piccolo and Gale Sayers. That's what it was. And a lot of people remember that.
Yeah, but if you don't cry, it's okay to cry. You know,
it is okay.
It
is okay to cry.
In a movie that makes you cry, that's a good storyline. I don't mind being happy or laughing or whatever, but crying, that's what I'm really like. Oh, man, I love that shit.
That's when we're most in touch with our feelings, right?
Yeah.
With who we are. Yeah. All right. Well, this has been a wide-ranging discussion. I really do appreciate you coming on and talking with me and everybody who's listening and sharing your life and information from your book. So one more time, you want to get the book? Where do you go?
It's at blackoutthebook.com. Every book is free shipping. I sign it. I put my number in it. Blackoutthebook.com. I'm on Instagram and Twitter at Porter on Air. Porter on Air. And I appreciate you making me a part of your show. And you're a pretty good host. You sound sort of relaxed for your second show. But I know you've been doing this for years anyway. I know the secret deal. And don't forget, when you go Oprah on them, remember back then, okay? Don't have selective amnesia.
I won't at all. I'm not that type of girl. So thank you, Paul Porter. Appreciate you. And as a last and final word for the Words on Flicks show, I do have some popcorn picks. And one is the remake of Suspiria. For those of y'all who love those horror films, Suspiria was the classic Dario Argento film about a girl who goes to a school and finds out some funky things are going on. So that's one. And then the other is Viper Club, which is a Susan Sarandon film about her trying to get back her son from overseas kidnappers. So there you have it. It's the Words on Flicks show. Thanks for listening. Have a great week, and see you soon.